This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me once again, as he is every week, is my esteemed co-host Matthew Rushing. But this week, we have two guests with us for a special discussion. From Standard Orbit, we have Landru, also known by his human name of Drew Stewart.
Joy to you, friends.
Welcome, Landru. And also from Earl Grey, our TNG show, we have Daniel Prue. Hey, Daniel.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, glad you guys could join us today for a special discussion. And up front, when people find out what we're going to talk about, and I guess they know because they've read the show description by now, they're probably going, oh my God, Chris and Matthew, how could you ever contemplate the idea of J.J. Abrams rebooting Deep Space Nine? And what would that be like?
I like that that Daniel has gotten into character here with his bright light just off screen there.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got a nice lens flare action going on the screen. Every time he moves, he kind of moves in and out of it. You know, it's really, really well done. So.
Oh, it does, doesn't it? Oh, that's pretty cool. All right.
Oh, I knew what I was doing. Yeah.
Yeah. You're doing it all in camera, right, Daniel?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
No, nope. So actually, he's got JJ back there with an iPad, you know, flashing
the iPad,
us.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Chris, you didn't introduce the third guest, which is the lens flare, but Drew did it for you.
Yeah.
So that's
there
okay.
We go.
And now Landru is holding his iPhone flash, turned on as a flashlight, up to the camera. Thank you, Landru.
I just wanted to get into character. I feel good
so,
now.
So today's discussion is going to be, what if J.J. Abrams rebooted Deep Space Nine? Now, I'm going to just say up front, as a Niner, I hope this never happens. I don't think it'll ever happen. In fact, I know it'll never happen. And it's not something that I would personally want to see, because I just don't think that it would be very good. I don't think that the core of what Deep Space Nine is would mesh with how the Abramsverse plays out.
Or even as a movie. I don't think that you can encompass Deep Space Nine as a movie.
Well, exactly. But I did want to talk about this today because it's an interesting exercise. And what actually triggered this for us was on Literary Treks, I think it was last episode, Matthew, we were talking about the Q Gambit, the IDW comic that's coming up, that's going to be the six-part story of Q in the Abramsverse. And the description for the Q Gambit says that the mischievous Q sends James T. Kirk on a quest that will see the Enterprise joining forces with familiar faces from Star Trek lore, beginning with the crew of a certain space station. And we speculated on what does that mean? Does it mean Deep Space Nine? And if so, what would DS9 be like in the Abramsverse?
Which I think, led to my first question, which was going to be, okay, is it that they crossed over somehow with the crew of Deep Space Nine from the Prime Universe? Or are the next generation, you know, characters from the 24th century actually kind of more compressed to be all in this same universe? Like this JJ-verse kind of has everybody, just running around in it.
They would be running everywhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, on a space station that would be so big that it could be mistaken for a moon, Right. I'm pretty sure that
that's no moon.
That's a space station.
I mean, geez, now how many crossovers are we getting?
Guys, like the reason that he's doing this, that Q would be doing this, to me makes total sense, right? He's kind of upset that that Sisko punched him, so he's got to go back in time and grab the only captain that can beat up Sisko.
Which what, is JJ Kirk?
Okay.
Because I'm just saying
he gets confused. He gets confused. Yeah, maybe halfway,
JJ's,
you know,
Kirk
through.
Really only gets his ass kicked every movie. So I mean, I don't see him beating anybody up. If anyone's gonna win that fight, Sisko's gonna win that fight.
Yeah, you're probably right, but you know, Q, he's got a sense of humor. So.
Yeah, but then when Q traveled over to he got a different Sisko. So maybe this Sisko isn't as badass.
Oh, maybe.
Well, that's the question. Would this Sisko be as badass? I mean, that's the main question right there.
Well, the question is, who would they cast as Sisko? Is it going to be Samuel L. Jackson?
No, I'm thinking he's younger. I'm thinking, yeah. Younger. I'm yeah, thinking they definitely Glover. Skew younger. Mm-hmm.
Like Tracy Morgan?
No, I was going to say like an Idris Elba. So,
who?
Ooh, Idris Elba would be really good.
Yeah, Idris Elba might work, yeah.
Yeah, so he was in that terrible movie last year, Pacific Rim, that I couldn't stand.
He was also in Thor's.
Yep, he was in Thor. So he would be a good guy. I mean, I think he'd be a great Sisko, actually.
I can't get over Tracy Morgan.
I've seen Star Wars over 500 times!
Oh goodness. All right. So well let's get into some ideas here, and let's just start with your first thoughts. So Landry, what is the first thing that comes to mind if you start, because you're our TOS guy, you and Mike hosting Standard Orbit together. So you guys are the ones who have had to deal with the crossover of different timelines with your characters. What are your first thoughts if you kind of extend this into the DS9 world?
Well, just visually and a lot of character-wise, I'm imagining that JJ DS9 would be kind of like the mirror universe of Prime Deep Space Nine. Very dark, a lot of smoke, a lot more sexual, obviously. But my first thought was that I think that the first thing that came to my mind was that I feel that Miles and Julian would be in a relationship, like a not just a bromance kind of thing. I think that JJ would push.
So how does Keiko fit into that?
Keiko, like Kurt said on Facebook, fell into a lens flare at the beginning of the movie, and Miles is just like, oh well.
She died in a shuttlecraft giving birth to the baby. I can't remember.
Okay. And there, Landry, I posted this on my Facebook page yesterday, this question actually, and our friend Kurt Gangliff said, in JJ's world, Keiko would fall into a lens flare, never to return, and I'd be okay with that. I got some likes on that comment also.
Yeah, I really have no problem with that. I feel like that may be the best idea in the long, amazing history of amazing ideas.
Poor Keiko.
Yeah. You know, I don't picture, this is the thing. I don't really picture Deep Space Nine honestly having to be all that different. I think Deep Space Nine is the one that pushed the boundaries. I mean, I was talking to Philip from Earl Grey the other day, and he doesn't really love Deep Space Nine, honestly, he said, because he feels like it's too dark. And so I think that it already was embracing that, you know, that aspect of its nature, and kind of, you know, the nitty gritty, what's it like to live in this utopia, let's explore it kind of thing, as we've talked about a lot, Chris. And so I don't think it has to change a lot for JJ to come in that kind of universe. I think obviously the main things that change are the aesthetics, maybe some of the things about the Bajoran people would change too. It made me wonder, do they really mix that up? You know, do they make the Bajorans more complicit in what happened, or do they change that kind of story up? And those are the things I feel like that they might mess with in this storyline. And then of course, you get to Sisko himself, and I feel like he would be a lot more brooding for a little bit longer, especially with if they go with the whole, you know, Locutus is responsible for his wife's death. I feel like he'd still come on the show a much more damaged man than he does when we see him. I mean, he's still pretty damaged, but I feel like they'd
literally
really
damaged
play that
to be half Borg.
Well, I mean, I just feel like they would play it longer. I mean, the first episode really kind of frees him, whereas I feel like that in a JJ type universe, they're gonna take that angst out a lot longer, which is sometimes good and sometimes bad. It just depends on how they do it.
It's interesting you bring that up, and this was the when you first brought up the topic, I was thinking, are we going on Deep Space Nine in the Abramsverse as it exists now, or are we rebooting Deep Space Nine from the start in the Abramsverse? Do you know what I'm saying?
My thought is rebooting it from the start, but like they did with how they split the timeline. So
I think Dan's question is, this is existing JJ verse, or is this a Deep Space Nine JJ verse where everything happened? TNG because, with Patrick Stewart still counts.
Right, because my and I know this is an in-universe thing, and if you wanted to write around it, you could. But if you're going to go with the JJ verse as it exists now and just carry it forward, there's a lot of things that happen in Deep Space Nine that are established through circumstances that presumably wouldn't happen the same way. So, like, you brought up Locutus. Who knows? Maybe we never meet Q. Maybe we never, apparently we do anyways in this universe, but things would be different. Sisko would be different. You know, Chief O'Brien would be, like, everybody would be in a different place. Of course, like I said, you could write around that, but that's the first place my mind went when I was thinking about it.
Which I think is a really big question, because it does, again, it really changes the entire story and where they're going to go with it. Now, the one thing, Chris, that I think would probably not change at all, and I think that they might really enjoy having fun with, is that whole metaphysical nature of Deep Space Nine and really getting to play with the mythology of Deep Space Nine. We know how JJ loves his mythology.
Yeah.
And so I really think that they would have a good time, and they would may get to sooner the fact of who, you know, he is, of the prophets, that kind of stuff.
See, I don't
think
they
would drag that out.
Well, my thought on that too, and I said up front that I would never want to actually see this, because I don't think that the Abramsverse that we've seen so far is compatible with the concept of Deep Space Nine, is that I think that the whole Bajoran religious aspect of the show would just be ripped out. And without that, I don't think you have Deep Space Nine. I think that they might grab onto the Dominion War portion of the story. That would fit in quite well. But even within the Dominion War, there are battles and we get to see them, but it's not an action storyline per se. It's still about the people. It's still about introspection. And I think that they would focus on the space battle portion of that and the war portion of that, and they would lose what actually makes it interesting, because there's only so much of that you can follow before you get bored with it if it isn't focused on the characters.
I guess I'm just basing it on Lost. And they love their metaphysical, philosophical weirdness. And that's where I really do. I guess I would completely disagree. I just think they would love getting into that, because it makes for really deep mythology. I mean, Deep Space Nine is a mythological show. So I feel like that would be one thing that they wouldn't want to lose, because it really plays to JJ's strengths as a storyteller and what he likes to do.
Based on Lost, I see what you're saying. Yeah, based on Lost. Based on the Abrams Star Trek movies, though, I don't see it.
Yeah. And that all comes out into the writing.
Yeah. We also have to say, too, like, we've only got two JJ movies, you know, so there's very little for us to even go on in the first place. It's
Now, I will also say, though, besides the two movies, I also base my thoughts on it on the ongoing comic series as well, which I'm on record as saying that I think is much better than the movies. But even in there, I still don't see enough of an inclination to follow the types of character storylines that would be necessary for Deep Space Nine to actually be Deep Space Nine instead of just being Star Trek with different characters and a different ship or station in this case.
A big issue we're going to run into the whole time we talk about this is, I mean, it's movies versus television, right? So we have 7 years of right. Deep Space Nine to compare to, like we said, there are only two movies, but even if you compare the original series movies to the original series, they're still very different flavors of something. So you kind of have to try to, like, of course they're not going to get into big character arcs. They maybe tried and did or didn't, but you know, you can only do so much in 2 hours. So who knows in this hypothetical scenario, in this JJ Deep Space Nine, they could go for it. They could try to make these character arcs front and center. We don't know because we only get the 2 hour action movies, which is what they're very, very, you know, intended to be.
Right.
I think too, though, you also have the difference when we're watching the JJ movies, they're coming at it from a sensibility story point from TOS, which is a very different type of storytelling than Deep Space Nine, obviously, yeah. too. So we are having that disconnect as well, where, I mean, they're telling character stories. I will argue vehemently in the JJ verse, they are telling character stories. They are just not different type of character stories than we got in Deep Space Nine. And
yeah.
I mean, I think that there's a lot of character growth that happens, especially in Into Darkness with Kirk and all of that. It might happen too fast for some people, but I buy it. I get it. All of that. So I can see them wanting to do that. They're also struggling against, okay, well, we feel like we have to make this a lot of explosions because that's what you do yeah. in a summer movie. So, but I could see them pulling out those character stories, especially if they were trying to model themselves after the Deep Space Nine storytelling. You know, it's, you know, you go with what you're kind of modeling it after, and TOS is a lot more fun. It's a lot more lighthearted, and it was a lot more action based. The yeah. show, I mean.
Well, Matthew, that actually ties into a question that I was thinking about this morning, and I wanted to ask you guys, and especially you, Drew, as well. The criticism that's levied against the Abrams verse, and it's a criticism that I levy against the Abrams verse as well, is that it lacks the core of what we consider to be Star Trek, which is the deeper message, the introspection. But they're rebooting the original series. And do you think that this criticism is fair? Do you think that we criticize the Abrams verse in this take on Star Trek based on what we've come to know Star Trek to be from the Next Generation, DS9, Voyager, and Enterprise? And if you look at it purely as a reboot of the original series from the 60s, is it really fair to criticize it for that? Or is it actually in many ways true to what the original series was? And then, like you just said, Matthew, there is a lot more action. It is a lot more fun. There are deep messages, sometimes knock you over the head messages in TOS. But you can also just watch those original series episodes just for fun. I mean, think of like the Gamesters of Triskelion, for example, you know, these types of stories. Is it fair that we criticize the Abrams verse for lacking the core of Star Trek when all they're really doing is rebooting TOS?
I've never thought about it like that. Because I hear the criticism. Mm-hmm. And I do understand, and I can see that, yes, these two movies, again, we're comparing two movies to Deep Space Nine, because we're on the Deep Space Nine show, 7 years of, you know, we've got two movies written by two guys. That's it. You know, in Deep Space Nine, we've got 180 episodes written by, you know, 30 or 40 different people. So I understand the criticisms, and I think that a lot of the criticism might fall on Kurtzman and Orci. But yeah, comparing it to TOS, I can see that it's the moral tales is pretty much what you would get from a below average TOS episode.
Well, and I'll just say this, like, when Into Darkness came out, John Tenuto wrote a guest piece on my own blog, and he titled it that Star Trek is in Star Trek Into Darkness. And some of the things that he pointed out is he thinks Star Trek is about something. Into Darkness has a lot to say about a lot of topical issues today, whether you agree with how they play out in the movie or just the politics of it is different, and characterization and fan nods. And we got a lot of those in the movie, whether you liked it or not. And so it definitely is doing what Star Trek tries to do, which is say something. It had good characterization, I thought, for the most part. Except for the one terrible moment where he yells Khan for no good reason. and really it was just the portrayal there. But I think all that together means to me that they could really do Deep Space Nine, I think, do it justice. Especially, I think Deep Space Nine lends itself the best to a JJ verse. And the reason is again, I go back to the way that JJ loves to do mystery and mythology, and again, Deep Space Nine is just rife with that. And if you had the right writers in there, and that means everything, you could really blow the lid off that mother. I mean, it would just be fantastic. Because the Deep Space Nine writers, I felt like they knew how to give you just enough. And by the end of the show, they wrap it up so beautifully. You know, like... And they knew when to take something out that they had just kind of dropped a line in earlier, and they knew they could do something with it later, and to pick that up and run with it. You know, they were really good at figuring that kind of stuff out. And so I think if you found the right writers for a JJ versus DS9, it could be done really well.
Yeah, definitely. But I think that's the key, the writers, because when we're thinking about this, we have to think about the writers that JJ has always used for his work. And the writing team for JJ's work, they're not on the same plane as Ira, Stephen Baer, and Ronald D. Moore and these guys when it comes to crafting a story, a deep story.
Yeah, and even most of the critiques of Lost, I mean, JJ wrote and directed the pilot, and then he said, "You guys have fun with that," and he left it to Carlton and Damon. So, I mean, JJ's influence, especially on a TV show, may not be long felt. It may be all to the writers, and he just establishes it, kind of like the ongoing comics, the Chris, you said you enjoyed. They are basically doing what they would do with a series. Here's the movie. JJ used the pilot for Lost to establish what he wanted out of it, and this is what he did for Star Trek. He would make the 2-hour emissary reboot pilot where, it's still left vague as to what the wormhole aliens are. I feel like that would be the arc of the first season, would be, what are the wormhole aliens? Are they aliens? Are they gods?
Are they smoke monsters?
Are they smoke monsters? Is that them around the corner there?
Why is there a polar bear on the station?
Why do I keep seeing my dead wife? A lot of him seeing the dead wife out of his corner of his eye, like, Jennifer? No.
So he would just constantly have flashbacks to the beach, and he would just shout in the middle of the promenade?
That's right. Daniel, what are your thoughts on this question about whether it's a fair criticism or not?
That's tough to say. I actually like 09 quite a bit better than I liked Into Darkness, and I think it definitely has a closer, I mean, come on, Star Trek's a big thing. Star Trek's a lot of things to a lot of people, so it's a very personal kind of question. But I think, in my opinion, that the first film is much closer to what I think Star Trek is than Into Darkness was. So I think they could get it right. And it is a fair criticism. On a side note, I do want to say, and as much as none of us here would want a Deep Space Nine series to turn into explodey, shoot 'em up space battles all the time, I think we'd get some pretty killer space battles if they got a hold of it, and all those big Dominion War battles. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be pretty exciting. So
there'd be more like that one shot of the Defiant, like it's on the camera's on top of the Defiant on its nose as it's like weaving through the fleet. And
oh gosh, yeah. It would be so awesome to see redone in amazing CGI. Just, I can picture it and it's fantastic. The only question
maybe
I have
in a few
though,
years
is how big are the nacelles on the Defiant, Daniel?
Well, they would, so basically it would be like somebody stretching the Defiant, so it would actually be twice as wide as it is long.
Okay.
It would look really silly, but you know, yeah, that's what you got to do when you're maybe at the universe.
And the Defiant would have to be pretty big, because I'm pretty sure that a JJ Deep Space Nine station would be the size of a Dyson sphere.
Yeah.
It could wrap around a Dyson sphere, I would think. You could probably fit a Dyson sphere in the middle of it, yeah.
It actually encompasses Bajor.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
It might make it a little bit harder to move, but hey, if we can transport to Kronos, what's to stop us from
a whole planet? We just moved a whole planet. How much for the planet?
When I asked this question yesterday in our social media outlets, what would you, my exact phrasing was, if we were to see the events of Deep Space Nine take place in the rebooted J.J. Abrams timeline, what do you think would be different? What would you do? And one of our listeners, Christoph Willemite, said that there would be no geopolitical plots, just, hey, let's fight scenes. And I think I said earlier that I think the religious element of the Bajorans would probably be ripped out. Certainly if it were a film. And my first thought was that we would get these, hey, let's fight scenes. But as for geopolitical plots, I don't know if I agree on that, because also our listener, Michael Peckett, said exactly what I was thinking before I even posted the question, which was that Section 31 would have a larger role, as would flashbacks to the occupation of Bajor, which would be more gruesome. And I definitely think Section 31, because we saw that in Into Darkness in the first place, would have a much, much bigger role in an Abramsverse DS9. And their very existence plays into the idea of geopolitical storylines.
I'm imagining something like maybe like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is doing, or like the whole Marvel Universe did in with Winter Soldier. Guess I don't really want to spoil it, but
just say, you know, spoiler alert.
Just say
spoiler alert.
Yeah. All right.
For Captain America to the Winter Soldier. Hopefully you have all seen it. But Hydra has been inside S.H.I.E.L.D. this whole time. And I think that I like that concept. I like that idea. I like how it's playing off in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. So when I heard, you know, maybe a lot more Section 31, I'm imagining like some kind of thing like, are you Section 31? You know, anybody could be Section 31, which I'm thinking like Eddington is Section 31 and like we've trusted him this whole time. And it turns out that he's trying to, you know, undermine the whole founder peace talks thing by introducing, here I am going back to, you know, the things Section 31 is actually responsible for.
The thing about Section 31 is the less you know about it, the more credible it is, you know, because
right.
It's
like
to
a
be,
reverse of the old NBC slogan, right? This is the less you know.
The less you know.
Right. You know, and you just brought up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Drew, but it's like, that's the worst super secret government organization of all time, because they put their logo on the side of all their trucks. And
right. It's not like their super secret plane has their giant logo on the top.
So I like the idea that, you know, in this Abrams verse that Section 31 would play a bigger role, but I would prefer not to see it so much, because otherwise everybody would know about it. Like, that's what was so great about it in Deep Space Nine, was we had never heard about this before, and we've been doing years and years of Star Trek.
Right. And, but in the JJ verse, we all know about Section 31 because Marcus flat out says, I'm, you know, Section 31. And so everybody's going to know the story of Khan and Section 31. And
they were very secretive with their base near Jupiter or whatever it was. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Right. They built a ship the size of Canada on, you know, in orbit around Jupiter.
How is that even possible? That was one of the weirdest things in Into Darkness for me. Like, really, Starfleet would have no idea that that facility was
there?
They
just never noticed? I mean, I know that space is big.
No, but they're
really?
Literally in our backyard. Like, there's no way that they wouldn't
know. How big is it, Drew?
Space is so big. You think a walk to the corner store is a long way. Well, space is so right. much bigger.
That's just peanuts to space.
That's it.
I can see them doing a lot of Section 31, but hopefully doing the way that Daniel talked about, where it does stay pretty secret, that there are only a few people who know about it. And mm-hmm. and honestly, I could see them wanting to have, you know, say like maybe only half of the main cast knowing about it, because they're trying to keep under wraps what could be at the heart of the Federation kind of thing and that kind of stuff. So I could definitely see them doing it really well. It does add credible mystery and suspense to the show. I think that's great. I love the idea of seeing some flashbacks to the occupation, because we don't see that. And I think getting the opportunity to kind of feel a little bit more for the Bajoran people by seeing some of it is would be great. I mean, you see a little bit on Terok Nor, you know what it's like. But that's, I mean, that's really peanuts compared to like actually getting to see, you know, Cardassians mowing down Bajorans just because it's fun, you know, that right. kind of stuff. That would
which is
really,
something that they wouldn't show on Star Trek.
Right.
Certainly
but
in the past.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, that makes some storylines like, say, Kira forgiving the Cardassians and then maybe working with a Damar in the end really powerful. You know, because we actually saw some of the horrific things that happened, and we have an idea even more so what is being forgiven. So I think that there's some real validity in actually, you know, not being outright just disgusting with the violence, but well done portrayal of violence does really help a show. I mean, in the same way that, you know, the well-done violence, I think, in the new Hunger Games movie did a much better job to evoke the horror than the original, where they kept quick-cutting so fast. I couldn't tell what was going on in the Hunger Games anyway. People were dying all over the place, but it didn't register in my brain because I didn't really see them die. And you need long enough with, like, a scene or something to actually to have an impact on you. And so... the same way in any good story, you know, you see that and it means something to you, and it registers with you, and you carry it forward, and you hold that against the characters just like the Bajorans do until they make you start, you know, changing your mind. And that makes for some awesome storytelling abilities.
Yeah, if they showed a lot more Cardassian injustices, it would do a lot to add for... to add to the Bajorans and to Kira and the Resistance and the Maquis, because I felt that the Maquis was really just like, we're abused, these Cardassians. Really? I don't see them doing anything bad. You know, you're in their territory or not. And I think that seeing more of the injustice, I think, would make it more powerful when we have to team up with the Cardassians and stuff.
Well, those are, I think, two separate issues, right? Because the Maquis weren't being necessarily mistreated the way the Bajorans were. That was
right.
Normal,
just right. General Cardassian badness.
Well, and that gets into some great storylines too. I mean, you can do a lot of things from today's world talking about that Maquis storyline, the geopolitical nature of giving up land, you know, to make appeasement between two big governments, but the little people in the middle are the ones who get stuck, you know? I mean, there's that's a huge storyline. It's in Deep Space Nine a little bit, but it's also not played up a ton, you know, as much as it could have been. So, you know, I think what, again, to me, I'll say it again, Deep Space Nine is the show that could benefit the most from a JJ verse, you know, interpretation, because it already had so much to play with. And asking that question of how do we live in perfection is a really interesting storyline, especially when nobody else in the galaxy cares about our perfection. You know, they don't even like us. So I just think it makes for a fascinating storytelling. And honestly, a much better idea than a JJ retelling of The Next Generation, because that just wouldn't even work.
I definitely cannot
you
see.
You would be so bored.
No, I want to see a reboot of Voyager, you know, but it could be a big ship with fighters that come out the sides and then be chased by robots and
see Voyager could be there. A great reinterpretation as well. I mean, I see that could, I mean, well, honestly, I feel like the JJ redo is just Battlestar Galactica. So just go watch the first season of Battlestar Galactica and you'll know what Voyager should have looked like.
That's the thing. Voyager's the promise of Voyager is that it could have been what the new Battlestar Galactica was, but instead it became more like
it wasn't
TNG light in a way. It wanted to be TNG in a sense that it wanted to get away from the serialized storytelling of Deep Space Nine that was running concurrently. It also wanted to be the original series with Strange New Worlds, and we've never met these aliens or been to these planets before. And it wanted to have some of the conflict of DS9, and then, of course, really none of that materialized.
Managed to drop all those balls. It's like juggling. Right. Oh, jeez.
So I do agree that, a new take, a rebooted Voyager could be quite interesting.
So then a rebooted TNG probably looks just like First Contact.
So I don't know. I just can't see a rebooted TNG.
Well, that's the thing. I'm just trying to think, in a hypothetical universe where now we've done TOS and next we move to TNG, then we go to Deep Space Nine and go to Voyager. It would be really interesting because there would be cascading differences. So Voyager would be crazy different than Voyager is now, and Deep Space Nine would also be super different, and TNG would probably be a little bit closer to what it was, but still obviously very, very different. So it would be really interesting to get. This is never going to happen. We're never going to have reboots of all of these same shows, but I think that it would be really neat to see anyways.
Do you guys think that in the Abrams verse Deep Space Nine that Morn and Keenzer would be sidekicks?
I think they'd be best friends.
Right. They would be bosom buddies.
Yeah. Right. Definitely bosom buddies.
See, I was expecting you to ask the question, what would get cut from Deep Space Nine? And I was going to say, Morn is out for Keenzer. They're just going to replace Morn with Keenzer. But no, I like your idea better, where they're actually friends and they hang out.
I think they would be friends, but Morn would have gigantic eyeballs
and talk all the time.
Right.
Oh, I also think there might be more enduring fight scenes.
Definitely.
You know, definitely just, more bar fights.
Exactly. More bar fights, more enduring fight scenes, you know, more Klingons with jewelry.
So, well, as we know in Into Darkness, Keenzer does like hanging out at a bar. So I
that
guess
is
that
very
does make
true.
Sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It has precedence.
He could be a Dabo boy.
He can't reach the table.
He could sit like on Lita's shoulders or something.
He has that little like floaty thing that Yoda did in Attack of the Clones when he's Yeah, so he's got that, and he's the Dabo boy on that.
No, he's the little guy that sat next to Jabba the Hutt, except he sits next to Lita at the Dabo table.
Oh, creepy.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe he would be selling Jamja sticks. Who knows? Who knows what Keenzer would be doing at Deep Space Nine?
Probably with beans on them. It would be like a shish kebab. It would be Jamba bean, alternating.
Oh my gosh. That's awesome.
Matthew, we talked about Jake Sisko a couple of weeks ago on here. How do you see Jake fitting into an Abrams verse Deep Space Nine?
Oh gosh. That's a hard thing. I mean, you know, I don't know what Jake would do. I don't see him being like a writer. I could see him maybe pursuing something else. Like he doesn't want to be a Starfleet officer, but he wants to be a doctor or something like that, you know, happening. But I don't see them allowing Jake to go the way of the writer. I think they'd find that too boring. Because, you know, at least if Jake wants to be something like a doctor, but he's not wanting to be in Starfleet, you know, you can put him in a lot of different situations where he's needed. That's a tough character to put in.
He could be like the Chekhov character of the Abrams verse, and he could be like
I can do that!
Wonder Kid, and he would be an understudy for Bashir.
So you're saying that we just turned him into Wesley?
Yeah. So right, yeah. So when Bashir decides to resign his commission, then Sisko could put Jake in charge as his new chief medical officer.
Let's reverse what happens at the Battle of Wolf 359, and we'll kill Jake and leave Jennifer alive. That's my suggestion.
Oh, wow.
Because I am not a Jake fan, but it would actually kind of be interesting.
Okay, just saying. Speaking. At least Jake is not half as annoying as Wesley Crusher. I mean,
yeah, he may not be as annoying. I don't think he's. This is not important. This is nothing.
Well, to get into. Yeah.
You guys should have that battle sometime.
Versus
the orb.
Here's another battle, a TNG thing here, and I'm surprised you haven't mentioned this yet, Daniel. I'm pretty sure in your vision of an Abrams versus DS9, Akira would be replaced with Ro.
She would. She
absolutely
would,
yeah. I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
I'm sorry. I facts are facts.
I just don't understand. Wait a minute. You have to explain this to me. We're going to have this out because this is my show. So I don't understand Ro. I don't understand what your love for her is, because really, this is what happened. They wanted Michelle Forbes to be on DS9. She said no. So what they did is they created a character that was a little bit like Ro, but then when you watch the 7 seasons of Deep Space Nine, she's the most deep, one of the most amazing characters that Star Trek has ever created. And Ro is still a character we know absolutely nothing about and could care less about, because we had 2 episodes, 3, 4 episodes with her. She's not exciting. Like, she doesn't ever get any chance to grow because she was stuck on a show where characters don't get to grow. So, like,
whoa.
How could you? How could you?
There are shots being fired all over.
How could you say that she's better than Kira when you got 7 years of one of the most amazing characters that Star Trek's ever created, and you want to replace her with a character that just?
Let me ask you a question. Based on your logic, we all liked. The Taylor, come on, help me out. I haven't watched you
Garrick.
In a little while. Garrick, thank you. We love Garrick, right?
Yes.
And you guys have said that he's been in how many? He was only in how many episodes?
Garrick is what, 31, Chris, in like, I think 31 episodes. Yeah.
Okay. Now I don't know your personal preferences, but do you think that Garrick is a better character than Neelix?
Yes, oh, yes, Garrick is a spectacular character.
I mean, I agree. Yes. Don't get me wrong. I don't think anybody that's
Garrick is one of the best characters in Star Trek.
Neelix is like the Jar Jar Binks of Star Trek.
Of course, I agree. But anyways, your whole argument of Kira versus Ro is that Kira got 7 seasons and Ro only had 7 episodes. Of course, Kira has more character development because she was on the show.
And if it was Ro from the beginning, Ro would have gotten all of those character developments.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, though, is that it doesn't make sense to want to replace Ro with Kira, because in the end, Ro becomes basically a pale imitation of who Kira becomes. Like,
no, Ro would be Kira. Ro would be the character. There would be no Kira.
Right, but I also would argue that I think
he's
that...
He's saying he's in love with Michelle Forbes.
Okay. And that's fine. I get that you like Michelle Forbes, and so I guess the argument really is you just prefer Michelle Forbes to
that's
the
actually,
non-visitor.
Maybe acting style that's part of it, but no, I think that Kira is way, way, like, and I know this is what they do, this is what they did, and it's just something that the writers did. She's way too over-aggressive, and I actually think that Ro is subtler in that respect. She's not always shouting at view screens and slamming things down. Now, I know that's only the first episode, and she does change over the course of the
Okay, situation. I have to do it because this is the orb. There's your wormhole! Sorry, I have to say it.
I was going to do it, Chris, if you didn't, so.
All right. So, yeah, it's probably partially the actress and partially just the fact that you said that Ro is kind of a pale imitation, Ro is kind of a pale imitation of Kira. I actually think it's obviously the other way, because Ro came first and she was developed first for that character. And I think they had to make a similar enough character that still fits that mold. And I think the character suffered for it.
See, Dan, you don't have to worry about it. They just bring Ro back in the Voyager reboot. When she would show up in her ship that's a little bit more advanced than Voyager, and then try to take over Voyager, but then she dies.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah. I guess, I see what you're saying, and that makes a little bit more sense. Watching Deep Space Nine, I just legitimately think it can't be argued that she's not probably one of the greatest characters that Star Trek ever created. And she has one of the greatest character arcs I've ever seen.
I think Kira is the best female character in any Star Trek. She's the best written, the most fleshed out character, a female character in Star Trek.
She doesn't have magic powers that she never uses. She isn't just something for somebody to gawk at. If we go to my series, sorry.
Unfortunately, the bar is set kind of low, right? For a lot of female Star Trek characters.
Well, and you're absolutely right.
You go from the females in TOS who aren't very respected, and then we've got Crusher and Troy in TNG who aren't used properly. And then we've got Kira. And then we've got Janeway, who's written, depending on who's writing that week, makes character development or unmakes it.
Yeah, so it's a very low bar, unfortunately. Yeah. And I wish it wasn't so. I wish we had...
But I would say this. Again, I think you could stack Kira's character development and character arc against any other character in Star Trek, and she's probably top five.
Yeah.
There's nobody else in Star Trek who has a character development arc like Kira, or just about anybody on Deep Space Nine. In fact, you mentioned Garak. Good Lord, Garak has a character development arc that's better than almost every character on Voyager. So, or honestly, even TNG, because of the depth of the character. So that's what I'm saying. It's like,
well, it's just the writing style.
DS9 develops its characters.
And so
and the writers in the JJ verse would be awesome.
I disagree with what you're saying. I respect your opinion, and it makes sense to me. I see where you're coming from. I do disagree with you on a number of points, but that's kind of not what the point of the show is about right now,
so. That's okay. I just wanted to talk about it finally, and you guys finally got a chance to let it go. But I still think it would have been interesting just to see what they would have done with Michelle Forbes and her character, just because you're right, they had created this character with that in mind.
Well, yeah,
so it would have been interesting to see it play out for sure. I mean, I grant you that.
We're talking about this with one character who was developed for 7 years and one character who made a few appearances, whereas if they had put Ro as the first officer, it is possible that the character of Ro would have developed into something similar to what Kira did. We don't know. I mean, we can never know that. So, and I would also say, just the comments that we made here, it's not that characters on different shows are bad characters or had bad arcs. It's like we said, the writers and the style of the show. DS9 happened to be the perfect situation for building out a character like Garak in 31 episodes to be a richer character than anyone that we saw on Voyager. With maybe, Tom Paris had a great arc. The holographic doctor has
Love
a great
Tom
arc.
Paris.
There are good characters there, but then you get characters.
Captain Proton.
Captain Proton had a great arc. Yes.
Just ask Dayton Ward.
but you saw it progressively, like as Star Trek went on, right? I mean, you get into Enterprise and you've got someone like Travis Mayweather, who just got no character development. You put him on the show and then you don't do anything with him. And so it happens. But well, let's bring this back around. I instigated that whole debate by saying that I think that in an Abrams verse DS9, Daniel would want to see Ro actually be the first officer instead of Kira. We're going to be heading towards an hour here very quickly. So is there anything else that you guys see in an Abrams-verse reboot of DS9 that you wanted to point out?
I know we made some jokes in the beginning about this, but I just want to say, and I know you both, Chris and Matt, you guys love, and who doesn't love the lighting on Deep Space Nine? The lens flares would just ruin it. They would just kind of ruin that mood and that atmosphere that they've set up. So hopefully they would find something a little toned down.
I think the lens flares in 2009 and Into Darkness are mostly on the Enterprise, where it's new and shiny. I think that in order to show that this is the opposite of new and shiny, no lens flares, no lights of any kind.
Just total darkness.
Total darkness. Not that's on the ship yet.
That's the third movie, Star Trek, Total Darkness.
Or they could only have like lens flares on the runabouts. So
no,
like really
everyone
cramped.
In the movie, they're all like Geordi with the blue veins all over him. Yes, from
God.
Yeah.
So. I'd say actually I could see them doing that change. And so I'd agree with Daniel. I think in a JJ version we might actually get the Ro instead of Kira. That would actually be pretty interesting and it would be different. So you know, when you're mixing things up and doing it in a different universe, I actually would agree with you, Daniel. I'd actually think that's cool.
Yeah.
Because it would be something very different. I wouldn't just kind of be expecting the same thing. So, and I think, honestly, DS9, you don't have to do much with the lighting. They'd probably just maybe add a little bit more haze sometimes to things. Yeah. We made the joke about the smoke, you know, earlier, but I kind of think they might have that just a little bit more often.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about some places that they went to, like Rigel 10 and Enterprise and Broken Bow, where it had a little bit more of that realistic environment feel to it, I could see the whole station being like that on DS9.
Yeah, because again, it's supposed to give it atmosphere, and that's a space station. Yeah.
Well, but I think it would be a much, much bigger place. And Terok Nor was an ore processing facility, and you only really get the feeling of that when you actually get down into the bowels of the station and you see where the ore was actually processed, where in reality, that whole station would be pretty dirty all the time, I think, if it were realistic.
So in the 09, Star Trek 09, we got a brewery as the engine room. Does this mean like JJ would want to continue that tradition? So like maybe we would film in Mall of America for the promenade?
Well, of course.
Something?
Quark would insist that there be a brewery, microbrewery, a restaurant, Mall of America. Yes, Mall of Bajor would be there and he would be in charge of it.
I'm sorry, I lived
just
in Minnesota.
Sponsorship from all those places.
Speaking of Mall of America, the Star Trek exhibition is going there. It's going to be there.
This is true. I read that.
I lived in the Mall of America.
That's awesome.
I lived in Minnesota for 4 years, and all I am picturing is Quark's having roller coasters in it.
Yes. Yes. Fun for the kids. Bring them by.
Oh, man. Speaking of the lens flares, though, you know, the lens flares never bothered me in these movies. I know it's a joke and people laugh about it, and I joke about it, too, but they never really bothered me, personally.
No, I didn't notice.
Although, JJ did finally, he showed his wife the movie, and his wife said, like, I don't even know what's going on in this scene. And then he actually admitted in the media that, yeah, I think I went a little bit too far. I'm gonna dial it back from now on. Yeah. You need your wife to tell you those things, right? Because you don't listen to anyone else.
Exactly.
Your wife says, honey, I don't even know who's on the screen right now.
Could Deep Space Nine ever fit underwater? I guess that's my question. I don't know.
I could see that. They could lower the station into the oceans of Bajor.
Yeah.
It's bigger than Bajor. We've established that. It encompasses Bajor.
Yeah.
Can you really put a Dyson sphere underwater? I mean, unless you
miniaturize
it somehow.
The planet is.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what it is. It's the episode where the station gets miniaturized.
Oh, there you go. Yes. Yeah.
One little station.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, let's give our final thoughts on this topic. This was interesting for me because I said at the beginning that I never, ever want to see this happen because I think that J.J. Abrams' take on storytelling and the Abrams for Star Trek is completely incompatible with what DS9 is. But Matthew, I think actually you kind of shifted me a bit on that now, because I do see what you say there about possibly DS9, not as a film, but as a television series, maybe it could benefit greatly from this.
Man, I feel like... more powerful than I should right now. So
stop pointing your fingers at me like that. Look, only Guinan can pull that off successfully, Matthew.
Excellent.
All right. Daniel, what are your final thoughts?
I love Deep Space Nine. I wish we could see more of it. I know it's, you know, we're kind of towing the line. I mean, of course, this is hypothetical, but we're kind of towing the line of too soon to reboot at that point. I think give it a few years and then do something with it. But I would be interested to see if for no other reason than to see what they could change and make different and interesting. You know, because guess what? And this is the thing about reboots. This is why I don't think people should get upset about them. If the reboot is terrible, you still have the original. And we have 7 fantastic years of a television show that we never have to give up. No matter how, they could reboot it 100 times and we would still have the original show. So,
yeah, I feel like DS9 is the almost perfect storm of writing, directing, production, design, arcs, everything. And I would be afraid of what anybody coming after it trying to not even like, let's make a new Star Trek series. I mean, we're talking about remaking Deep Space Nine. I would not want to be that person.
Man, it just brings warm feelings to my heart to hear the TOS editor say that, the TNG editor talk about Deep Space Nine with such love and respect. I bow to you, my friends. I agree
just
with
so
you
I can
guys.
Get your confidence so, when you turn your back.
And Daniel, I'm completely with you. Like I don't get mad about reboots because, like you said, you know, if you love the original and you thought it was great, it's not like that goes away. And if the reboot sucks, then you just have more ammunition, you know, for how great the original was and to everybody. So I think there's no reason to not to try something like that if you can come up with a valid and good idea, you know, creatively for something. And so any reboot, I just want it to be good, you know. I would like it to be better than the original if they can do it, you know. Yeah. So, and there have been some great reboots over the last few years in television and in film. There's been some terrible ones too. But I just think that this would be kind of fun, even though, as Chris, I think you're completely right, we would never ever see this because not enough people care about Deep Space Nine to have it rebooted.
Well, yeah, and I said a minute ago that I think you changed my view a little bit, and I can see it. I think it's interesting as a thought exercise. I may be a little bit different from you guys that I don't like reboots. I don't like movies that have a 2 or a 3 or a 4 after their name. I just think it's there are exceptions where it turns out well. On television, Battlestar Galactica was a case where they created something really brilliant. You know, I grew up watching the original Battlestar Galactica. So seeing it rebooted for me was them taking a show that I loved as a kid and seeing it redone, but it worked. But for the most part, I get very frustrated with Hollywood for their inability to come up with original ideas. It's just, let's just rehash this and rehash that. And movies also, you know, sequels, and I don't mean sequels like there's a continuing story. I mean like the first movie, you know, so like Back to the Future, that's a trilogy which kind of works. You know, it's kind of interesting to follow that storyline through. But for the most part, you have movies where the first movie was great and they made money off of it. So let's do another one. And then let's do another one. And it's like, no, please come up with a new idea. And then I'll go watch that. We almost have a rule in our house. We don't buy movies that have 2 after the name, especially when it comes to kids movies. And so I don't ever want to see TNG rebooted. I don't want to see
DS9
rebooted.
What about Toy Story 2 and 3?
I was just going to say
Toy Story is a case where I think the movies do get better as they go. Toy Story is one of those situations where they did a good job with it. If you want to get into animation and Disney and all, Lilo and Stitch is a case where Disney came up with a really cool idea and made a really great movie and then ran it into the ground by making sequels and Leroy and Stitch, and then they made an animated TV show out of it. And it's like, no, your first movie was great and was the most creative thing that you had done in years. And just because you made money off of it, doesn't mean you need to keep going to that well over and over. So
just
I don't
wait for Frozen 2.
Well, that's going to happen. I guarantee
what's Frozen? I haven't heard of this thing called Frozen.
Oh, man.
It's okay, Daniel. Just let it go.
So I never want to see any of the Star Trek series rebooted. I want to say new Star Trek series and new original Star Trek series. But I think this was an interesting thought exercise anyway. And I think you all made some good points. And you did shift my thinking on it a little bit. So I hope anyone listening who came into this episode going, oh my God, they're going to talk about this today, hopefully got something out of the discussion as well. Well, before we go, thanks for joining us, Landrew and Daniel. And Daniel, you joined us on very short notice here, so I appreciate that. Tell everyone where they can find you guys around the interwebs and, of course, the network.
People can find me on Earl Grey every week where we talk about TNG. And they can find me on Twitter at 1UpDan. That's the number one, not the word. And I want to say thank you, Chris, for inviting me on because I thought about this before I got on. I believe I'm the first host on the network to be on all five of the show podcasts.
Maybe.
I believe. All
right.
So this is,
well, you know, we'll punch your card and send you a t-shirt.
I was.
Oh, I'm sorry, Drew. You're right. Drew has.
No. I haven't been onto the journey. You've been onto the journey?
Yes. Okay. Yes, I have. I'm the first.
I've never been onto the journey. I think the Earl Grey guys are the only people who have ever been onto the journey. Yeah.
That is true. I think that's true. Yeah.
Why?
I beat you.
Why were you? Okay.
Yeah. All right.
My show is a crossover with them. That doesn't even make sense.
Landrew, apart from To the Journey, where can people find you on the network and elsewhere?
Well, pretty much all the shows but To the Journey. Gosh. You can find me every week on Standard Orbit, where Mike and I talk TOS. And pretty much that's about it. You can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE.
Excellent.
That's it. I'm easy to find.
Well, thanks again for joining us today, guys.
No problem.
Thanks so much.
Well, Matthew, I'm glad the guys could join us today. It was an interesting discussion, I think.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. You know, didn't know what to expect at all getting into this conversation. but I think it turned out really well. You know, it's a lot to think about when we get the idea of what would you do with the JJ verse and Star Trek in general. And then, of course, moving into, say, a TNG, Deep Space Nine, Voyager, maybe even Enterprise, all this stuff, what that might look like. And so, but yeah, I think, you know, we came to some really cool conclusions that you could do some really neat stuff with Deep Space Nine in the JJ verse, and I think that's really neat. Obviously, it'll never happen, but it was really fun to get a chance to just speculate with the guys.
And I think universally everyone agreed with Kurt that Keiko falling into a lens flare never to return would be okay.
Yeah, I think that's just a really valid idea.
I think maybe Miles feels that way, and also Julian.
You know, we make fun, but you know, Miles would be torn up if that happened.
He would. At least Prime Miles would.
That's true.
I don't know about
That's
JJ
true.
Miles.
That is true. We All don't. Right. You never know.
Well, this weird topic is not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Star Trek 2009 5th Anniversary.
So I wrote a whole big thing about all that stuff. Where's Gary Mitchell? Why are there Romulans? This doesn't make any sense. And why is Tyler Perry in this movie?
Earl Grey.
Ferengi.
Can I have a root beer, please?
They're all examples of Ferengi. Dad! Not being Ferengis, so...
Sorry, that was a terrible, terrible knock. Earl Grey, now with 90% more Ferengi impersonations.
The Orb.
Great O'Brien episodes.
You know, obviously, too, I love the fact that Miles is not afraid to kind of bend the rules and do what he thinks is right.
The Ready Room.
The sound of her voice.
It's a masterful portrayal of the working class hero kind of thing that O'Brien is without making me feel you know, guilty and without coming across as too heavy-handed. To the journey!
Darkwing Rewrite.
It's that awkward moment when you accidentally call your teacher mom in class.
I hate to tell you, but I don't know if I ever did that.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Sorry, dude.
Warp 5.
Locks.
And you see that, I think, in the way that he cares for his patients and he takes care of them with what we would consider very strange remedies. And yet, he's taking care of the whole person, and I really, really like that.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The Mount Rushmore of Trek.
No, I mean, in all seriousness, like, Chris, every time that you make a joke about Robin Leffler, I myself think, yes, he's right. Oh, wait, he's making a joke. Oh, that's too bad, because he's right.
Continuing mission.
Star Trek Horizon.
The main reason I wanted to do the movie was to close out storylines that Enterprise didn't get a chance to. I felt like it was kind of my contribution to the show that meant a lot to me.
Literary Treks.
Mission Gamma Twilight.
I don't think that Bashir knows how to be in a mature relationship. When Ezri starts exerting her own identity more, he doesn't know how to deal with that.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and some days we even have two shows for you. And you'll find them in a wide variety of places, including on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune. You'll now find us in the Libsyn and Blueberry directories, as well as on Spreaker, where you can actually grab episodes and put a very nice player on your own blog if you want to share some of our episodes. Nice embeddable player there. And you'll also now find us on Swell. Swell is a great network. It's the Pandora for podcasts. That's one way you can think about it. They do have a page, and we'll put a link to this on the show page for here, where you can click through and you can listen to the show through your web browser. But primarily, Swell is a very interesting smartphone app. It actually, you know, finds out what you like to listen to, and it keeps streaming things to you, kind of the way Pandora would do for songs. But it does it for podcasts, and you can search in there, go directly to our shows, as well as find other things that are very interesting for you as well. In the world of Star Trek, I know that our friends at Mission Log, the Roddenberry Star Trek podcast, are in there as well. So check out Swill if you have a chance. And I also mentioned iTunes, and if you're over there, be sure to check out our artist page, where you can find all of our shows together in one section. Also this week, we launched the new Trek FM Complete Master Feed. So if you want to find an easy way to sample all of our other shows, because we do have 16 shows in the network, or if you are one of our wonderful listeners who listens to every one of our shows, and I don't know how you guys do it, and we really appreciate it, but we know a lot of you out there do listen to all the shows on the network, you can get them all in a single feed now by subscribing to Trek FM Complete, the Star Trek Podcast's master feed, and you'll find that in iTunes as well. And while you're there, if you like the show, please leave us a star rating and a written review. We'd love to hear from you, and it does help other listeners find our Star Trek shows and The Orb as they look around in iTunes. If you'd like to send us feedback on today's show, and Matthew, I have a feeling that we might get some feedback on this topic of Abrams Burst and DS9, you can do that in a variety of ways. You can go to our website at trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send to a show and choose The Orb, and that will come to Matthew and me by email. You can also send us a voicemail if you'd like. If you look on our show pages on our website, in the left sidebar, you'll see a big item that says send us voicemail. And you can do that. And all you need is your browser and your webcam's microphone. And you can upload that right to us right there from the page. We also have forums at trek.fm/forums, where you can talk to us and other listeners. And then in social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. We have a new community on Google+, which has a URL that I won't even try to explain here on the show. But if you're on G+, look us up, trekfm, you'll find our community there. Circle us on there, and we'll circle you back. And also, we're on Twitter under username trekfm. Now, Matthew, when you're not trying to figure out which Holosuite programs would be most popular in the Abramsverse, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing Literary Treks with you, where we talk about books and comics of Star Trek. We also interview authors. You can also find me, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not thinking about which Dabo girl that's in a really skimpy outfit in that new JJ Deep Space Nine you're going to be asking out, where can we find you?
Well, I think the Dabo girls in JJ's Deep Space Nine would be Orions with red hair.
There you go. I love it.
I think so. Yeah, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much everywhere in social media under that same username, as well as on my personal website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, of course, you'll find me, as Matthew said, on Literary Treks. You'll also find me on Warp 5, where we talk exclusively about Enterprise. There's Continuing Mission about fan films, Matterstream about science and other social topics, and creative there as well. And, of course, I'm on the Ready Room every week with hosts from all around the network, where we talk about Star Trek news and all five live-action Star Trek series. So go check those out and see what we're talking about over there. Before we let you go, we'd like to tell you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com, the best source for audiobooks online. As a Trek FM listener, we have a special offer for you. You can choose any audiobook you want, absolutely free, just for trying Audible. They have a lot of Star Trek books over there. Also, new releases, bestsellers, pretty much any genre you can think of. It's a really great way to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. I love it myself. If you love podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks. So go check it out at audibletrial.com/trekfm. Sign up, choose any book you like. If at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose because you get to keep that audiobook. But I know you're going to love it. By supporting Audible, you help us keep the Orb coming to you every week. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.